One.
Blog Talk Radio.
Talk Radio. It's, oh, I'm on. It's 7 o'clock. It's November 19th. We're live with Ron from Florida Estates Winery. And
hello.
Tonight, it's, there he is, and it's all about, we're on 1000mics.com. You can look at look for us there. Go to 1000, spell you know, type it out, 1000, mics, M-I-K-E-S.com. We're there live, and we're also on Blog Talk Radio on the usual page. If you'd like to give us a call, 646-727-3235. That number will be repeated during the intro right now. Tonight's topic is, that's right.
No, not Spain.
Well, see, I had that advertised. It's not Spain tonight. So those of you who saw that it's on 1000 mics now. Okay, Blog Talk Radio and on Twitter, on our Twitter account. It's not on Spain tonight. Sorry about that. And,
we've done Spain. That's why we're not doing it again.
Yes. But I had the music ready to go, and that's not it. So I don't have any Germany music. I'll find something. I'll find an Oompa band or something.
Yeah.
There you go. And we'll try that. And right now it's the intro. We'll be right back in 1 minute and 30 seconds.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A weekly call-in talk show presented each Thursday from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern. Featuring Ron with Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. We encourage listeners to call and participate during this hour-long broadcast. Dial 646-727-3235. 646-727-3235 anytime during the show. Winery location, contact information, and upcoming events are presented at the end of the show. Sit back, relax, and join us with a glass of world-class wine made right here in Florida. And now, vineyardist, tasting expert, cellar master, and winemaker with Florida Estates Winery. Here's Ron.
Thank you. Yes. Bus people, hi.
Yes, we only had, thank you, we only had one. All right, settle down, folks.
Settle down.
We only had one busload today. The rest of the people that are joining us in their cars, we actually, a couple of the neighbors opened up their yards. They're charging $5 if you want to park like right next to us. It's $10 to park with us. And it's $5 to park in our neighbor's yards. And then as you further get down the street, it goes down to, I think, the very end of the block. It's like 50 cents. But
that's reasonable.
It's to be fair.
It's still cheaper than the bus all the way in, though. Yeah,
so. That's true. The bus is, I forgot how much it was, but it's great. But they get wine on the bus, so that's good.
That balances a little bit.
So bring your own chair. Bring some wine from Florida Estates Winery, and you get in for free. And you can listen to the show live right here in the back 40. So we have tonight is Germany.
Germany, not Spain, but Germany.
Right.
We've done Spain. If you tuned in for Spain, though, you can listen to a previous broadcast on Spain. And maybe sometime during this program, Mike can look up what that was and let you know what that was. And you can
how long ago and everything.
Yeah.
I think it was a while back.
It was a while back. It was one of the first countries we did, I think. Spain were one of the first two that we did. So.
Yep. Okay. Here we are, and we're talking about Germany tonight. If you'd like to call the program, be sure to get on the line with us within this hour. We'll be done at 8 o'clock Eastern time. The phone number to call is 646-727-3235. We have to get on with the program. We have a lot for upcoming events and everything at the winery. So stay tuned for that coming up in a little bit. Thank you. Go ahead, Ron. Thank you. Good.
All right. It's all mine. Welcome, everyone, tonight. If you live locally, I have to make an announcement. The Tampa Tribune had a Pasco County section, which is the county we live in here. Welcome back, visitors. And we do get lots of visitors coming back for the winter. It's our winter visitor guide. Had a real nice little blurb about Florida Estates Winery in there also. So I'd like to thank the Tampa Tribune for that. Thank you. I'd like to thank the Tampa Tribune for that. And if you are local, or I think online, there's all sorts of online ways you can read articles and stuff. So if you are not in the area, you can go to the Tampa Tribune and look for the Pasco Visitor's Guide, and there's a little bourbon there on this. Germany. We are going to talk about Germany. I want to preface this by saying I have been a German wine fan for years. I really, really like German wines. I have always been a big fan of German wines, and I really have to say the reasoning, they do grow a lot of other types of wines, but the reasoning has been one of my favorite grapes out of Germany, and it's been one of my favorite wines. And so whenever I talk about German wines, I have a little special place because of the fact that I have been a fan for so many years. And Riesling is basically the grape of Germany. If you want to pick a grape for a region, like I've said before, as you are talking about different parts of the world, you can almost associate a grape with a region. For example, Australia, you're looking at a Syrah. In Argentina, the Pinot Noir, same as Oregon Pinot Noir. But when you say Germany, the Riesling is the first one that pops into most everyone's head. So it is the classic grape from that region. German wines have a probably are the most missing. The growing region of the German wines are really quite far north compared to most of the rest of the world. I mean, you can grow grapes just about anywhere. I mean, it is possible. And I've mentioned this before, and many of the countries I've been talking about, and many things we've talked about, that you can grow grapes just about anywhere in the world. It is possible. But there are two major bands around the world, two major regions around the world that really are the wine growing, are the grape growing regions of the world. This is where the majority of them are found. This is where the majority of grapes are grown. This is where the majority of the major wine areas are. It is an area in the north that goes across the country that covers the across the United States. It covers Napa Valley, Washington, New York, on around to France, Germany, Italy, Spain, on across to the southern old Russian areas of the world, and Moldova. It also continues on around to areas in China, southern China, and continues on around to loop back to the United States. And basically between the 50th parallel north and the 30th parallel north is your basic growing area for grapes in that region. And all of Europe falls into that area also. In the south, it is from around 40 south to 30 south going north. That is the main region there. That includes the southern part of Chile, Paraguay, Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand. So these are the two major wine growing areas of the world. If you talk about wine, then it falls within these two parallels mostly. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't grow grapes other places. Obviously, we grow it in Florida, and that is further south than your 30 degrees north parallel. And same thing with India and different parts of Australia, even go further north. And so there are places you can grow grapes that go outside of that area. But when you're within that area, though, Germany tends to be toward the further north end of this region. It is further north of, even going further north of the 50th degree, which is your classic. Now, when you look at a map, and I always like to point this out, too, just to put this in perspective of Germany, not to try to give you history lessons, geography lessons, but when you look at a map, most people can understand where the United States is and the geographic regions of the United States, which gives us cold weather and warm weather and influences of oceans and different things like this. When you look at a map of the United States, the Napa Valley, the New York State, and the growing regions there and all that are right around 40 degrees north on your latitude. It is just about, if you take the 40 degree north parallel and you run it right through, you're pretty much crossing Napa, Northern California, and into Oregon and that area, and then through New York. But if you continue around the world, same latitude, 40 degrees north is through the middle of Spain and way down into the boot of Italy and into the southern part of Europe and Armenian, also in the southern part of China and the northern tip of Japan. So when you start looking at it that way, our northernmost regions of growing really are the southern part of the European regions of growing. And since Germany is located north of Spain, Italy, France, then it really gives it a much cooler, much different growing climate than you're going to find just about anywhere. In fact, part of Germany even peaks above the 50 parallel north. It goes higher than that. And because it's cold in the North Sea and the cold weather coming in, the North Sea does keep the temperature down a little bit. But basically, Germany is quite cold. Overall, it is a rather cold area to be growing grapes. So, again, not to go into a geographical lesson there, but just to try to put it in perspective of the fact that the being so far north, the grapes tend to be a little bit slower on ripening. It's not really great growing region if you want to get down to it, as compared to so many others that we've discussed so far, Italy, Spain, most of France. If you remember, if you've listened to talking about regions of France, we've been talking about some of the regions of France being quite far north, and the whole country of Germany is north of some of the areas in France that we were talking. So it is a very cool region to be trying to squeeze out grapes. But because of the cool region and because of it, if you didn't have grapevines planted there, you'd end up with forests and bare mountains. It just, the grapevines are pretty much taking the place of nothing out that will grow there except for your forests and mountains. You're never going to get any basic crops out of it. That's why most of your German wine-growing regions tend to be along rivers, majority along rivers. They have gotten away from the rivers and the banks of the rivers and the hillsides and mountains of the rivers and spread out into the flatlands. And because of that, it's created problems in German wines over the years. And I'll get into that in just a little bit here. But the reason that the secret of German wines, because of their shorter growing season and because of the fact that the grapes do struggle a little bit to grow, makes for a balance of two ingredients that are really critical and really do make the wines so fantastic coming out of Germany. And one of those is the acid or the acidity of the grapes, and the next one is the sugar. You have to have both in wines. You have to have some sugar. A wine without sugar would be very acidic. It would be a sharp. People describe it as a bite or a burn or sting or all sorts of stuff like that when you have too much acid in the wine. So you have to have the sugar to balance it out. And on the other hand, without sugar, without acid, you just have a flat. A good example would be one of your favorite soft drinks go flat on you. You all understand what the flat means on that. The same thing would happen in wine. If you don't have the acid in there, you'd have a very flat wine. You just have a sweet liquid, and it wouldn't give you any character, any depth. So with the combination of both the acid and the sugar, it makes some great Riesling wines out of it. And Riesling is the great grape out of Germany. It's a majority of the wines there in Germany are made from Riesling. Some of the best vineyards are almost exclusively Riesling. the vineyard sites in the Moselle, Saar, Rivar, Rangau, Nahe, Floss. These are all your main regions, main areas of growing grapes in there. And the planting in these areas are Riesling. That's not to say that other grapes aren't planted, and there are. There are quite a few other styles and other grapes, but the majority is Riesling. Riesling grape, though, tends to mature a little bit late, and so it does create a problem. This is why most of your plantings of the Riesling grape in Germany are planted on hillsides facing south when you go down to the rivers. And really, I have to emphasize, and it's very true, a lot of the plantings of the German regions are on rivers, and there are rivers that run throughout Germany that are, if you want to find a wine-growing region of Germany, then follow one of the rivers, and you will find a wine-growing region. That's really just about the way it is. There are rivers that four or five the major rivers that cross Germany, and because of that, then most of the wine is grown on the south-facing banks of these rivers. They do go out from the rivers into the flatlands, which creates actually a lesser grape. Doesn't give it the quality and character that you get. Your main rivers are the Moselle, the Rhine, the Ruhr. The Main, that's another one where there's a lot of vineyards that you're going to find. I'm trying to think of one. I got a blank on what the other one is. The Neckar. That's the other one. I know if I thought about it for a second. That this is where you're going to find the majority of your major vineyards along these rivers. And because they're facing south, they're going to get most of the sun. You will find few vineyards planted on the north-facing slopes of these rivers because you're not going to get the amount of sun. Again, we have to look at how far North Germany is, which really has made an influence in German wines throughout the centuries. German wine, German grape growing was phenomenal back 120, 130 years ago. It was the German wines were rivaling French wines in price and in quality and in stature. When you spoke of quality wines from that part of the world, the great Burgundies and the great Beaujolais and the great German Moselles and the great German Rhine wines would all be spoken in the same sentence because they were all equal. The German wines were commanding great prices and they were of great quality, and they was something that people sought after and people you can still try to find some old German wines back from that area. And then World War One, World War Two, and it really, not because of the fact that German wines became any less important, but more of the fact that Germany didn't concentrate on the wines, didn't keep the stature up. They started to plant more away from the hillsides into the flatland areas. More and more into the flatland areas. My engineer was talking to me there. I had to wait a second. When they went to the flatlands, it gave lesser quality of the wines. And so during the middle of the 20th century, Germany started to plant other grapes. The Müller Thurgau was a much earlier ripening white wine variety, but it lacked the charm and elegance of the Riesling grape. The Sylvaner became another very popular grape that was planted a lot then, and it was earlier ripening. Again, not quite the quality of the great Riesling grape, the noble Riesling grape. They also started to do other grapes, what they call the Spätburgunder, which is a noir grape. Again, we've talked in the past about how they name different grapes in different areas by different names, but it's all still the same grape. The Spätburgunder, our Pinot Noir. The Portugieser is another red variety that was planted in Germany and made for very soft red wines, but it got away from the classic Rieslings, the classic styles of Rieslings, which seemed to take away some of the Rieslings, but some of the Germany's quality. There are some German wines from centuries ago that you can still, if you have a bottle sitting around, will still demand tremendous prices, still going to auctions for thousands of dollars. But you haven't seen that in a number of years out of Germany because it hasn't used those in quite some time. In fact, a little bit of history on German wines, the same thing with French wines too, and I don't think we talked about this on French wine, but it happened a lot in Germany. You know, French wines back at the turn of the century, that they were so expensive and they were so well made back then, and the demand was so great. I said turn of the century. I'm not talking about the 2000, 1999, 2000, not this turn, but the turn of 1899 to 1900, 110 years ago. Back in that period of time, the German wines were so well made and had such quality that there was a shortage and there was a high demand for them. Because there was such a high demand for them, there was a lot of counterfeit wines, fraud, wines that were made in lesser style and dumped in those bottles. And they were used from new grapes. They were made from grapes that didn't have a particularly great growing season, didn't have any great sugar levels and stuff, but they were wines that were sweet but no character, sweet but no body. They were throwing such grapes, using grapes such as the Ortega, the Bachauer Riebel. Wines that we've lost over the years as far as doing anything, but wines that were used as counterfeit wines that had no no quality. And some of those, many of those caused the, helped cause some of the downfall of the German wines, because the market was flooded so much with those that people were afraid, afraid of German wines, afraid of the quality, afraid of what it was. Here I have this great wine here, I'll sell it to you for $1,000. And but there was no guarantee that it was $8,000 wine. It could very easily have been any type of other combination of grapes in there or anything. So that helped the downfall. And it happened in Germany, in France also too. But Germany was really, before World War One, it really was a problem. The new cross grapes, crossbred grapes that were genetically selected, the ones that I was just telling you about, continued on after World War II because they created very sweet wines. And German late harvest wines were noted for the sweetness. But these wines were heavy, syrupy grape juice, heavy syrupy type sweetness. It wasn't the clean sweetness that you would find in and the late harvest wines out of Germany. It was a more of a high residual sugar and higher residual sugar, lower acid, and not a good balance, and very very syrupy type wines. But because of incomplete fermentation and stuff like that, they were getting some strange wines. Now, the technology is there that they can balance these wines out and get what they want much easier than they could back then. So you're not finding as many, or if any, of these type balanced and undrinkable, basically, wines out of Germany. In the 1980s and 1990s, German wines became more diversified. I started drinking German wines back in the early 70s, mid 70s, and you had most of them tend to be much sweeter than you find now. But in the 80s and 90s, they tend to be wines that were off dry to semi sweet, not real heavy sweet, and a lot of German red wines started to be made and praised in the 1990s. Again, I bring up the Spätburgunders from the Rangau and wines from that region because of the diversity of German grapes and because of the growing, they tried to diversify to get a little bit more of what people were looking for. German laws, we've talked a lot about in every country we've discussed, and even the United States with our AVAs, which is the American Viticulture Areas, we've talked about the laws that were adopted to define the quality of the different wines of the different regions. Italian wines have their designations, French wines, Spanish wines, but German wines also have their designation. German wines also have a standard, a table of standards of wines. Only three of them, though, unlike France, which tends to break them a lot of them down, all that. German wines have three categories. The first one is called the DTW, or Deutscher Tafelwein, or simply meaning table wine. This is the one that you're going to find most often in the German stores, on the tables, not exported so much, not really noted so much here in the States. What we find here are the ones that are labeled QBA, and the B is a small letter, so if you look on the labels of German wines, you will see QBA. What this means is a quality wine from a specific region, be it the Rangau or Moselle or Rheinhausen or whatever. If it says QBA, it means it's not the standards of those regions, and these are wines that you can trust that are from these regions and not vintage. Basically, QBA is equivalent to our AVA, American Viticulture Area. If you have a Napa Valley wine, you know it's going to come from Napa. A QBA on the label means it's going to come from that's on the label. And then the third is QMP, and the M is a small letter also, QMP is being large. And this is quality wine with distinction. Also, there is another designation which I didn't see listed anywhere, and I always have looked for on German wines, is Qualifying mit Prädikat. If you see the term Qualifying mit Prädikat, that's Qualifying, Qualifying, MIT, mit Prädikat, Prädikat. Qualifying mit Prädikat simply means that it's a quality wine with the approval of German standards. You'll find that on a lot of German wines. I do always look for that designation on a bottle of German wine whenever I go to buy one. It basically tells you that it's not just putting the two together. It is something that German has approved and that they have a little bit more quality in that particular wine. So again, look for the one that says Qualifying mit Prädikat or QMP or QBA. These are all good designations. I've talked about the different categories of German wines before, and it is time to talk about again about the sweetness levels of the German wines, the designation of the of the types of wines. Botrytis, Botrytis cinerea, this is a mold that gets into grapevines. You can find this anywhere in the world. I have I've read articles and I have seen discussions stating that Botrytis is in every grape, or in every grape cluster, I should say. You will find that a Botrytis mold cells in every grape. They are not activated. They never are activated unless the conditions are correct, which means that you would have to have the proper amount of moisture with the proper temperature, which activates this mold. What the Botrytis mold does is live off the sugar. Lives off the water in the grapes. It sucks the moisture out of the grapes. And so a Botrytis wine is a wine that has been affected by this mold. It is designated on labels as late harvest. You may see it as late harvest, which a lot of times doesn't always qualify as a Botrytis. A lot of times you will see wine designated Botrytis, B-O-T, it's a Botrytis, B-O-T, B-O-T-R-Y-T-I-S, the Botrytis. You will see a wine labeled Botrytis. And if you do that, using means that it's been affected by the mold, and the mold has sucked the moisture out of the grape, which tends to make the grape sweeter. The wines are a bit sweeter. Within the German QMP category, there are six subcategories, and these range from drier to sweeter. This is where you're going to get your Botrytis wines, your classification of your Botrytis wines. The first level, Cabinet, K-A-B-I-N-E-T-T. This is a light, soft, refreshing wine. This is great for aperitifs. It's not really sweet. It is just a lot of your easy drinking, drier style Rieslings out of Germany. Spätlese, S-P-A-T-L-E-S-E. Spätlese, the term Spätlese literally means late harvest. It means a riper grape than the Botrytis. It means one that usually is not, but can be affected by the Botrytis mold, but it's just a little bit longer on the vine, which means that it has a little bit higher concentration of sugars. Next category, Auslese, A-U-S-L-E-S-E. These are made from riper grapes, usually Botrytis. Some residual sugar in this when you make the wine out of this. You can find these first three categories everywhere. German wines of Spätlese and Auslese are distributed everywhere. You can find a Spätlese in grocery stores and drugstores. I mean, you can go into any of your local Walgreens or CVS or any of these, and usually in the wine section, you find yourself a Spätlese and Auslese, a German Spätlese and Auslese. They are very, very well distributed, and they're usually pretty decent wines if you want to get yourself started on German wines. And they're really pretty recently priced. Nice thing about them. That's probably why I started on German wines years ago, because a decent wine at a reasonable price. Next category, Baron Auslese, B-E-E-R-E-N-A-U-S-L-E-S-E, Baron Auslese. A little bit rare. This is Botrytis grapes. These are the ones where the grapes have actually been Botrytis. These are the ones where this moisture has been sucked in, they're being sucked out of the grapes. These are the ones that are really quite sweet wines, but not a sugary, syrupy, nice, sweet wine. Put a plug in for Florida State's Winery. These are wines a lot like our Plantation Spice, a nice, clean, sweet wine. Nothing overpowering, nothing real strong, but something that is just a really like chewing on a grape, like putting a green, ripe green grape in your mouth, that type of taste. Next category, Trockenbaren Auslese. And this is interesting. I have to throw this out here, too, for all of you wine lovers. The Trockenbaren Auslese, category. And I have seen lately where the ice line comes before the Trockenbrennerschliesse, which is actually saying that the Trockenbrennerschliesse is sweeter than the ice line. I don't personally believe it is. I don't think it is. I can't see how it can be. But you do find that in a lot of the stuff that you're looking around different things where they're showing that the Trockenbrennerschliesse. Trockenbrennerschliesse, I usually put in the next category after the Brennerschliesse. That's spelled Trockenen, Brennerschliesse. I just spelled the Brennerschliesse. This is a very, very, very sweet wine. It is the grapes on the vine look like raisins. The moisture has been sucked out of them, and it looks like you have little bitty raisins sticking up there that are hanging from your vine. When it's picked and gently pressed, and you have an extremely sweet wine, very high-end residual sugar with just a wonderful, wonderful taste. Ice wine are wines that are made that are actually frozen on the vine when they have been raisined, or when they have had all the moisture out of it. What the freezing on the vine does is actually pulls out or freezes a little bit of ice that is still in the grapes and turns into ice crystals. And these are picked while they're still cold, pressed while they're still cold. And so you actually get a very high concentration of sugar with no water to dilute it. Now, everywhere makes an ice wine. You can make ice wines all over the United States. I've said this before in previous programs. There's a man in L.A. that makes an ice wine. He freezes grapes every year, squeezes them, makes an ice wine. So there's no real restrictions in the United States or in Canada. You can find ice wines all over the place, German ice wines. In fact, not to give them a plug, but the local Stam store has got an ice wine on the shelf for $20. A great buy. If you've never had one, check your local stores and stuff. You can find them at a reasonable price. But those are the categories, the subcategories underneath the QMP designation. German wines did something new. They put a classic logo next to the name of the grape varietal. What they're doing actually is telling you this is an uncomplicated dry varietal wine for everyday use. It's a reliable price, reliable taste, affordable reliable quality, reliable taste, affordable price, just a pleasant, nice, easy drinking wine that they say that you will enjoy and you could enjoy. So if you see German wines with a classic label on it, that's what they're saying. Also, they're saying it's not that super sweet wine, so you won't find this on the other ones. The QMP and the QBA wines must come from specific growing areas. There are 13 designated regions in Germany that are designated for these growing areas, most of them along the Rhine River. And most of them, most of the regions are quite well known, the Moselle, Soar, Rivar, Rheinhausen, Nahe, Rheingau, Franken, Floss. These are all QMP, QBA regions. When you start looking at the region, something else I need to point out to you here, which is always easier to distinguish wines from one region to the other in France. If it is a Moselle wine, a Moselle wine from Germany, then it will be in a green bottle. If it is a Rhine wine, it will be in a brown bottle. It's always been the designation that's easy to tell if you're getting wine from one region or another. They use the color codes of those two, which basically is telling you this is a wine from our region. So a brown bottle from the Rhine, green bottle from the Moselle. The best wines that you're going to get from all these regions, again, are Rieslings. I'd say probably 60% of all grapes planted in Germany are Riesling grapes, a phenomenal percentage of them. but of the Great of Germany. But some of the, I'm just going to cover lightly some of the four or five basic regions of German wine growing. Now, these are a lot of other, within these regions, there are a lot of towns, a lot of vineyards that we can go into them. They all make a distinct style that is unique to their little area. Some of them range from very small, as small as 15 acres, on up to very large as 2,500 acres, 3,500 acres on some of them. It just depends on which ones you're looking at. Overall, most of them are rather small, and I say acres. If you are somewhere else in the world listening to this, hectares is about a third of an acre, an acre is about a third of a hectare. So do the math on that. I'm not really sure the equation, but I speak acres because I'm American. So the Moselle, Soar, Rovar. This is along the Moselle River. Changes directions, as do most rivers in Germany. The rivers meander back and forth, up and down. They're not flat, fast-flowing, rushing rivers. They are slow-moving rivers that take your time going through the country and twisting and turning and everything. The Rhine River, for example, Moselle River travels nearly 150 miles before it gets to the Rhine River. And if you were good in a straight line, instead of those 150 miles, you'd only travel about 70 miles in a straight line. So it does twist and turn a lot going back and forth. The wines coming out of this region usually are very fragrant, light color, a lot of fruity acid, some effervescence to it. You're going to find late harvest wines from this region. The vineyards along the Moselle and Saar and Rovar rivers are all planted on hillsides. Some of them are very steep hillsides. You can find some vineyards that are planted at 70 degree gradients. I mean, 70 degrees, it's unbelievable. Grade going up. I mean, I was at the Daytona Speedway a number of years ago. I was able to go on the track, and the banks on those tracks, I think, like 30 degrees, and it was almost impossible to stand up. You would tumble down. Wow. So 70 degrees, it's just unbelievable. I it's hard to imagine. Of being 70 degrees, obviously everything has to be done by hand. There's no way any type of machine or animal can get in there. So everything's done by hand, and because of the steep gradients, you also have a lot of problems with losing soil top and slate and stuff. So every early spring, a lot of it has to be picked up from the bottom of the hills and taken back up into the hills. So very, very labor-intensive because of the hills and all that. You get a lot of great wines though out of the Moselle region. The Moselle is really, you're quite far north. It's one of the furthest north, and actually the western part of the German wine growing region. Rheinhausen is the Rheinhausen growing region is the largest of all the designated German regions. This is 62,000 acres of vineyard. Again, you have a lot of small little growers and a lot of small little people that producers that are within that area, but the whole area over 62,000 acres. And it is surrounded on all sides by different vineyards, different growing areas. They produce some very high quality wines out of this area, very fertile land coming off the Rhine. And back when you get away from the hills of the rivers and stuff and you start going into the flatlands, a lot of wine is produced on these flatlands. This is, which we are also familiar with, Liebermilch wine. This is the Blue Nun that you see on the shelves. I'm sure everybody's familiar with the Blue Nun brand. That's a Liebermilch, a pleasant, outstanding, but one that is enjoyable for every night of the week, if you would like. It's got the just a nice, light, soft white wine. We, again, give a plug for Florida State Wine. We have a Plantation White, which is in that style, just a light, pleasant, soft white wine, something that is just very enjoyable, but honestly, nothing you would brag about, but something that you would really enjoy on a continuous basis and never really get tired of. And actually, in fact, over 50% of the Liebermilch comes from the Rheinhausen region, so it is a very popular wine from that region. They also have other grapes. The Mueller Thurgau accounts for about 25% of the Rheinhausen total grape acreage. It's also got of other types, the Sylvaner, the Chardonnay. They also use a Huxerib, Kerner, Bacchus, all different types of grapes that actually are hybrids from the Rieslings and the a lot of the white wines from that region there. The Nahi, I've already pronounced it, and I was been corrected many, many times and say but I always think say Nahi, is one of the smaller regions, but it also creates some great wines out of there. This is, when you talk to people who are German wine drinkers, they will continuously talk to you about the Nahi region and the quality, high quality Riesling that come out of that area. The Mueller Thurgau is also planted quite extensively in this region. Actually, I believe there's more Mueller Thurgau than there is Riesling. The Riesling grape is second, Sylvaner third. The Riesling grape, though, when you look at the premier vineyards and the prime vineyard sites, the Riesling is the one that controls those. That's from the Pfalz, P-F-L-A-Z. Pfalz is a Latin word meaning palace. It's the technology and viticultural land there has really been taken over by modern technology. It's they've expanded and produced some great wines there. More modern style, more modern up-to-date equipment and plants and not plants, but the production than you will find probably most of the other parts of Germany. They've really expanded that area. It's a probably the biggest uninterrupted areas you're going to find of vineyards throughout Germany. Areas are broken up. This you can travel for 80 miles or so, probably 70 miles or so in different areas and see nothing but grapevines in this area. Has the second highest planting of the Riesling grape of all of Germany within this region. Makes mild white wines, but rather rich body. They plant the Mueller Thurgau, Kerner, Sylvaner, shrub grapes. They also use a red grape, the Portugieser, and they are doing better. They are making some very nice red wines out of this area, Portugieser being one of them. They're planting some a Dornfelder, which is a red wine that is starting to really put this grape and this red wine on the map for Germany. It's quite interesting grape, and I've never tasted one. I have seen it on the shelves. I really should pick up one and try it. I should have done it before this. I can tell you about it, but I didn't. But it's I've. When I was seeing Seemingly Great. It's been out for a few years, and I've been trying to follow it, and it's really being received quite well throughout the wine world. And Franken. Franken region is one of Germany's quality wine regions. It lies east of Frankfurt on the Main River. It's northern part of the Bavaria region. The climate is really quite cold there. It's overall, compared to some of the others, because of its eastern location, northeastern location in the wine growing region, really quite cold, but it does make for fantastic white wines and very crisp white wines that are just very good balance on that. Müller Thurgau is primary grape, Sauvignon, Riesling doesn't perform well here. Again, the Riesling has a shorter growing season. Because of a shorter growing season, it tends to not get fully ripe in time, so you get a very high acidic taste of the wine. So the Sauvignon and Müller Thurgau are really the wines grown in this region. A little bit of earthiness. They tend to be, most of them are making a drier style, again, because the season is so short that you don't have the time to keep it on the vine to bring up that the sugar content as much as they want. German wines are great, though. Let me end this by saying, if you haven't had or haven't discovered German wines, I highly recommend it. I said at the beginning, I will say it again, I've always been a big German wine fan. I will continue to be so. Don't get me wrong, I appreciate a good robust Cabernet or good leathery fruity Merlot or a great Pinot Noir, but some of those German white wines have so much character, so much body. They're growing Chardonnays in Germany now. They're starting to plant Chardonnays, and they're trying Chardonnays, and they're trying different grapes there. But your classic German wines and your classic German grapes are a taste treat. Makes a party in your mouth as you drink them. So there's our German wines.
Very good. Excellent. yeah, very interesting. And so does that cover everything about Germany?
We finished Germany time. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I know some of them, like France, took I don't know a few weeks.
Weeks. Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. We have we have a few minutes left. We need to cover some events that are going on at the winery and announcement about next week's show, which is not going to happen because it falls on Thanksgiving. So,
y'all enjoy your Thanksgiving day.
Yes, and I'm still enjoying my glass of Plantation Spice, speaking of wine. So,
I have a French Bonnet that I'm enjoying this evening. It's very good, actually. I'm really fine.
Interesting.
I wish I remember who gave it to me or how I got it.
I was going to ask Walgreens. I never thought about buying it from Walgreens.
Walgreens, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're up for 24 hours, too. That'd be interesting. Okay. Coming up this weekend on November 21st, this Saturday, is the next wine class. Wine class at the Florida State's Winery from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Various topics are covered, including a brief history of wines, the grape varietals, the diseases, the glass styles and uses, cork history, evolution and uses, oak aging, and there's, of course, a wine tasting, and you also discuss the wine tasting process and scoring, rating of wines, and you get to sample and discuss the wines in detail.
And plus the prizes and all sorts of stuff.
Oh,
It's a lot of fun.
Yes, definitely. And you definitely want to attend that, and that'll be this Saturday is the next one. Coming up on November 28th, that is the following Saturday, is the next Wine Festival held at the Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Wine Festival is it's a free event. You can go in there. There's plenty of parking. There's definitely some great things to check out. There's vendors there. They usually have artisans. They have homemade products for you, gift ideas. Think about that for next week. Definitely holiday season is upon us, and you want to get some unique gift items, definitely check out the winery on November 28th for Wine Festival from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. That is November 28th on Saturday.
Plus a DJ coming out. They will have a DJ live music.
We got some more information in here. That's
live music, you know, all sorts of good stuff.
Yeah, it's really a great time, and it's a great time to go down there because it's always a great day.
SPCA will have a pet out there for adoption. In fact, we adopted a pet last festival. SPCA came out and they brought out. So.
Oh wow! Congratulations.
Yeah, it's really cool. it was adopted. On a Saturday after Thanksgiving, you have family, friends coming into town.
Mm-hmm.
Great opportunity to come out and just relax with one of our local Florida wineries. Show them that, you know, we have our wine country down here too, just like everywhere else in the United States. Florida is a wine country. Bring them out to the winery, and it really is a guaranteed good time. It's a lot of fun. It's a good way to relax and enjoy. And the weather is supposed to be absolutely gorgeous Saturday.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And enjoy those giant oak trees out back. And it's just great. And there's the building is air conditioned. So if you need to get in for some reason, it's just great either way. So December 12th coming up. That's a little further ahead. But December 12th is the Wine Festival and the winery's 8th birthday, number 8.
Number eight.
Yeah, very cool. And
we're long will be in our team. Thank you.
8 years old. So,
8 years old.
Special birthday party coming up on December 12th. That is from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. also. And we have information. Let's see. Oh, the next wine show will not be next Thursday because it does, again, fall on Thanksgiving. So we will not have a show on Thanksgiving.
Enjoy your Thanksgiving.
Yes, have a great Thanksgiving, and let's see. I'm not real sure what the next topic will be, but we'll get the advertisement out as soon as we can. Put it
we'll start doing some of the small ones. We'll do Austria and Switzerland and some of the small European countries and all that, and we'll do a blitz of a lot of those small ones and get those all out of the way.
Wow, okay, very cool. Let's see, we also want to take a quick second here to welcome Crush Pad. They are located in San Francisco. I guess they allow people to come in and make their own wines out there in San Francisco, and they just joined us on Twitter, so welcome to All About Wine, and hopefully you're out there listening, and you'll join us again. And
Hello, Crush Pad.
I was just their website and everything. It's kind of interesting.
Really? I love San Francisco. Great city.
Never been one of these days, you know.
I love San Francisco. I really do. I absolutely love the city.
All right. We are done for this week, and I guess for next week, we may do an impromptu show somewhere during the week, but just because it's the holidays and because I can. But we may do an extra show just for the heck of it, but talk about different things. And we'll see you, I guess, here on All About Wine in about in 2 weeks. We will have we'll cover some of those other countries and get all kinds of information there. Ron, appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you to all the listeners out there.
And car people.
Yes, and they're actually boarding already. You know.
Oh, are they? Oh, bye.
Yeah.
1,000 Mike people. Thanks for tuning in. Also, appreciate
I like that. They're boarding already. Okay, bye. That was great.
They heard me. They're gone. Yeah.
Right. They're listening on the way back.
It's like the space shuttle. Once it takes off, you get your car and you leave.
That's right. Is it 2 minutes? Is up? Take three. I've done that. All right. We'll see y'all then. Here comes the information coming back. We'll see y'all. Have a great Thanksgiving, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, Ron.
Bye now.
This concludes our call-in talk show for the evening. Special thank you to Ron Hunt of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Visit the winery online at www.floridaestateswines.com. That's WINES.com. Email address for the winery is corp@floon.com. That's corp@FLEWN.com. Or call area code 813-996-2113. If you're in the area, Florida Estates Winery is located 4 miles west of Interstate 75 on State Road 52. The winery is open daily 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. For information on our show and music stream, visit us on our MySpace page at www.myspace.com/ChicoDog1. That's DAWG and the number 1. Email address is podcast@chicodog.com. Follow the show on Twitter at twitter.com/MikeWCFL. WCFL as in Wesley Chapel, Florida. If you have a topic you would like to discuss on air, please contact me. Chico Dog Live is a weekly talk show hosted on Blog Talk Radio.